At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, and welcome to Breeders' Cup Week. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. And as I said, welcome to Breeders' Cup Week. I wish I was telling you live from Del Mar, overlooking the paddock, where we were for Pacific Classic week lead up. And I suppose if we'd taken odds on two opportunities to go to Del Mar, Breeders' Cup week and Pacific Classic week, if you had taken odds on me being at one or the other, you certainly would have taken Breeders' Cup week, not Pacific Classic week, right? It's just occurring to me that that is a bit of a of an odd sidebar to what has kind of transpired here the last few days. Thanks so much to everybody that reacted and expressed the concern about the health and well-being. This was a very surprising and unusual turn of events, to say the least. I can't tell you how disappointed I am to A, not be at Del Mar, and also to have lost those 2 days, Thursday and Friday. But I mean, in terms of what transpired, because I imagine there's a couple of questions, and I wasn't trying to be, you know, mysterious. I just didn't necessarily think it was all that appropriate to lay out. But on Tuesday and Wednesday, really Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I just didn't feel great, and particularly Wednesday night and Tuesday night, I had been up during the night with what I would describe as kind of angina-ish, you know, dyspeptic and, you know, just feeling uncomfortable, chest and you know, not what I would associate with a heart problem per se. Finally on Thursday, you know, as I was preparing for the show, I was just, to the extent that I just was not, you know, feeling like I can't, I'm not going to be able to make 3 hours of this, feeling like this. So to Tina's chagrin, as it turned out, I didn't really think much of it. But I started to drive to, you know, to my primary care guy, and I called them because I wanted to make sure they, you know, they were there, because the last time I had to go there, they switched me to the other office. So I just called in, and they said, don't come here if you've got, you know, chest pain, discomfort, go straight to the hospital. So I went to St. Peter's, which is a smaller Albany hospital. I forget why I had to go there once or twice. Anyway, I guess if you're looking for a quick response in a hospital, chest pain is an excellent code word. A key phrase. Yeah, tell them chest pain, and they responded, very pointedly, and started in a series of tests, and You know, I just was kind of going through the motions until, I guess, the blood test came back. And the blood tests, now you know why when they tell you, we learned a lot here over the last 48, whatever it is, 96 hours since, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. When they tell you, you know, your blood work came back good. Well, and you think, okay, what does that mean? There's an enzyme. It made me think of Taken, Marco from Tropoyo. That's how my mind works. That enzyme level. That's what they, when they say, in fact, Hammer and I talked about this over the weekend. They proceeded to, at that point, when this enzyme level thing came back, they swung into action. And they slapped me on a gurney and said, you're going to the cardiac catheter lab. And literally, I mean, 5 minutes later, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of discussion. They made me sign something, I was a little uncomfortable. Sign this. What is it? Well, it's a release. Okay. A release from what? From responsibility if you kill me? What the hell was it? I still don't know what I signed. Yeah, the guy says, listen, we're going to do a catheter, and if we find a blockage, you know, we'll clear it, and we'll put a stent in, and if it's something bigger, we'll, whatever. So, sure enough. At first, I just thought it was something, and to me, it feels minor, honestly. I've been describing it as the 10 claimer. Of heart attacks, it's even like a tertiary artery, the circumflex artery that serves the back of the heart. This, you know, it's sort of, it's like the screen door of you know, home repair. So they cleared it. I spent my first night at the age of 61. It was the first time I ever spent the night overnight in a hospital. And it's not, I don't recommend it overall. Although, let me tell you, the people at St. Peter's were so nice and so out of their ways. Anyway, so there's the upshot. And I've also learned how many contemporaries and friends and so forth that have had this, that have had various stent, placements. And I got tremendous guidance. And people calling and checking in. I can't thank everybody enough from St. Peter's and from Capital Cardiology in Albany, Dr. Morrison and Dr. Pargo and the whole staff at St. Peter's and Tina, who, you know, you want to get a read on how much your spouse cares for you. have a little cardiac incident. that'll give you a read. But of course, it was also tempered with her annoyance that I drove myself down there. I couldn't just be worried for me. She also had to slip in some annoyance that because I drove down. I said, can I fly? And they said, well, no, you can't. And frankly, one of the reasons that I even went to get checked was because of the trip. Because I thought to myself on Thursday morning, I said, I didn't do the show Thursday because I wanted, I knew to get down there early, wherever I was going to end up going and getting looked at. So there you go. I didn't want this to drag out. But thank you to everybody who was just so nice, expressing concern, I guess it doesn't take much for everybody to know, you know, for those of, that have been listening for 15 years, to know that something's amiss. For me to miss 2 days, you know, after the, you know, at right after the pre-entries come out, you absolutely knew that that something wasn't right. I got the greatest. It's funny. I got the greatest when it comes to that. Lenny Shulman told me that Haskin called him on Thursday, and Haskin was listening. And we're going to talk to Steve this week. We haven't had Steve for too long in this few months, and apparently, I mean, we weren't that long into that replay on. You know, Casey reached quickly for the Bob Neumeier piece from Monday, and Haskin, like 5 minutes in, called Lenny. He said, "Have you heard from Vic? Something's not right." I mean, it took him. sometimes you can just, you just know, I guess. Anyway, thanks everybody. It's touching, really. So we'll do our best here over the next. The next few days to catch up. And of course the draw is today. I mean, so in a lot of ways, other than speculating on the way the pre-entries laid out for Friday and Saturday, and there were a few themes that you've undoubtedly already touched on and you know seen batted around, and that is of course that the turf races oversubscribed widely, and the dirt races came up shy. And, I don't know what necessarily. I discussed this a little bit with Pete on the In the Money Breeders' Cup pod, and I did the filly and mare sprint, which is more interesting than people are giving it credit for. Be aware. I mean, that is not the Gamine is not a slam dunk. The more you look at it, honestly, is she the likely winner? Yeah. But anyway, the overriding theme to me was that the Breeders' Cup is going to have to figure out a way to fill out the main track races better. And part of the problem is the dirt mile, which is just a problem. Every year, it's not a division. It doesn't get rewarded with an eclipse, other than being fodder for you know the multi race wagers and other than just to boost the handle of the event. What is the purpose? It is only these until Belmont comes back into the rotation. There's only one place where it's an actual one-turn mile, which is, you know, the concept in terms of the Met and the Cigar Mile. I mean, that's what the idea of including a dirt mile was going to be. All it's doing is taking horses away from the sprint and from the classic, and it just I don't get it. I don't understand what the value of this thing is. There's a couple of horses that would not have been able to run. Snapper Sinclair is going to run in the dirt mile because he was buried on the turf mile, also eligibles. So other than that, I just don't see it. That's contributing to the problem. I mean, obviously the classic and even the distaff, which has got a nice, you know, obviously a nice size field. But the juvenile fillies, the filly and mare sprint, you know, these came up really with smaller fields than they should. I don't know how else to characterize it. Anyway, we can include that or have that portion of a conversation as you know, the analysis starts to roll in. To mention some things from the weekend, and we're going to start out with Kevin Kirstein at Churchill. and get the Churchill weekend report. Also, of course, the meet started, the fall meet underway yesterday with the first of the Stars of Tomorrow cards and two nice stakes, the Rags to Riches and the Street Sense. But, of course, the nice card of all two-year-old races and some interesting winners in there. Remember we said that, Dale Romans, remember at the end of Saratoga? I had said, ran it to Dale, and Dale said, I said, I didn't get a chance to talk to you all summer. And he said, you'll talk to me this fall. We got a bunch of things happening. He wasn't kidding. Dale Romans, the after a very quiet, first two-thirds, portion of the season of the year, the train is pulled out of the station at Romans Racing. We'll get to that. But Kevin's going to join us, and we'll get a look at what went on at Churchill in terms of the works and the variety of horses, the work storyline, and some of the horses that were ended up declared out of Breeders' Cup, a big part of the weekend, and there was no bigger cause celeb than Letruska's picking up company, and this turned into a giant controversy and overanalyzed mayhem ensued because she picked up the Baltus worker, and did she get outworked, and what's the ramifications, and how does it affect, honestly, and there was actually a lot more of that over the weekend than there was specific excitement about, there was more, not, I don't want to call it negative, but there were more questioning of horses' status going into the weekend, frankly, than there was I think than you'd hope or expect. The Asmussen camp, now seemingly beset by concerns over, over this terrible Keeneland, 1 for 57, and of course the Santana Keeneland meet, and taking literally the worst riding drought in Keeneland history, seemingly just a impossible scenario that Ricardo Santana would not win a race. 0 for 80. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. We talked about it a week ago, and he was 0 for 15. And thought, well, he'll bust out, and there'll be a few. Wow. But it's now spilled over where people are saying, well, how does it affect your view of the Asmussen runners in the Breeders' Cup? You're worried about Jackie's Warrior? We're worried about Jackie's Warrior and Echo Zulu because that have been training in California for weeks because they had a rough stretch at Keeneland. I don't know how we're gonna assuage people's concerns on that front, I guess. But it's a topic, right? I guess it's a topic. So we'll see. We'll reach for Kevin and get KK in here and get going. Tons of good racing, too. Keeneland finished strong. Not only did they finish strong at Keeneland, they had just another record. The records keep falling in terms of handle and sales, too. I mean, we didn't get a chance to summarize how things ended up at Phasing, it was a record going into day four. Just outlandish results at Phasing to wind down the yearling sales season. But Keeneland, with you know, 181 million bet over the 17 days. And there were some things in it that were, you know, certainly the fun that I think we all had. I mean, I couldn't hit one to save my life. The turf pick three, I played about six of them. And there was one I particularly kind of botched that would have been a very nice hit. But anyway, Keeneland, terrific results for the meet. And that momentum, we'll sort of expect that it carries into the Churchill Fall as well. Of course, you know, the turf course situation figures in. Let me get, okay, do you need, let me get you KK in case you don't have that handy. It's funny, mentioning Kevin, I got a nice note from him the other day, and he said, you know, don't watch the Eagle game on Sunday, you know, concerns over the, how I was feeling. So, that was one of three that suggested I not watch the birds, but that worked out okay. yeah, that worked out real well, actually. So there we go. There's KK's number. At Keeneland, Friday and Saturday. How about, in fact, I did notice that there was an interesting theme from the stakes action over the weekend. A lot of the Breeders' Cup outfits. And yes, some obvious prominent ones like Asmussen and Chad Brown and Brad Cox, Todd Pletcher. But you also had Michael McCarthy and Rusty Arnold, you know, with Breeders' Cup participants. They won with Fayette, won the Fayette with Independence Hall. Big effort by Independence Hall under Javier Castellano. And best performance for Independence Hall. I would say best. He's had three really big big efforts in his career. And clearly, you know, he's got plenty of talent. And Navratilova for Rusty in the Valley View as well on Saturday. Wesley won the Bowman Mill with Nakatomi. And McPeak had a couple of stake wins over the weekend. He won the Rags to Riches yesterday with Sandstone, with Brian Hernandez Jr., and also with Brian Saturday at Keeneland. Camp Hope won the Brian Station. So, I mean, there were a whole bunch of Breeders' Cup outfits that won over the weekend. McCarthy, Arnold, Ward, McPeak, D'Amato, Mandela, Romans, Fletcher, Asmussen, Brown, Cox, Cassie. That kind of caught my eye. We'll see what caught KK's eye. Kevin Kirstein joins us from Churchill. KK, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Great to hear you back on air.
I appreciate it, and appreciate the opportunity to catch up on the weekend. And you had the start of the meet yesterday, obviously, but a busy morning, and your videotaping of the... Do we call it that? Do we still call it? Is it really videotaping? I guess it's camera phone catching videos that are invaluable, you know, for immediate looks. And you had plenty of activity Friday and Saturday, despite weather woes, and all eyes really on the Cox Barn. Talk a little bit about the weekend and what went down.
I'm still going to call it videotaping just because I just can't get the 90s out of me, but it was a really fun weekend beneath the Twin Spires. Obviously, you mentioned with the kickoff of the meet yesterday, but with all the Breeders' Cup implications from the horses that are based at Churchill Downs having their final works, and it didn't come without a couple of hiccups because we did get some rain in the area, so it trainers had probably a little bit of heartburn trying to figure out when the best time to have these horses have their final works, and because they all ship out today on Monday to California. And so Brad Cox worked his three Saturday Breeders' Cup horses yesterday, She Dares the Devil, Essential Quality, Nick's go. And I'll tell you what, it's one of those where we know all these horses are very talented horses leading into the Breeders' Cup. It's, you know, almost as if who isn't doing well or who probably isn't at the top of their game. And I can tell you all three of those horses for Brad yesterday are very much so at the top of their game. Essential Quality, who's, you know, one of the top three-year-olds, if not the top three-year-old in the country, he's gotten some flack recently from the way that he works in the mornings. And he really had some critics on social media leading into the Triple Crown season and the Kentucky Derby, just because he never really likes to go by his workmates. And I've seen really a huge change in this horse over the course of the last couple of weeks. And I just don't know if something clicked in his head or what, or if Brad's, you know, putting him with the right workmates. He did have jockey Florent Giroux working him, which usually Essential Quality had his exercise rider. Maybe that had something to do with it. But he had one of the wow breezes that I've personally seen of all the Breeders' Cup contenders at Churchill Downs yesterday. He's just so impressive. He worked with Colonel Bowman, who he's worked with many times in the past, and really galloped out well around him. And you could tell Brad was just thrilled with the work. And it was one of those where, you know, he may move up a little bit on some people's rankings just because of the way that he made that move yesterday. Nick's Go is the likely Breeders' Cup Classic favorite. He's also based in the Brad Cox barn at Churchill Downs. He does the same thing almost every single day when he trains, when he works. He goes hard 100% of the time. He really doesn't have an off switch, and he's very aggressive in his gallop. He's very aggressive in his training, and you saw that with the work yesterday. He went 5 furlongs in 101 and change, and he had a double gallop out, and he just goes, you know, hard 100% of the time. It's just the type of horse that he is, but he's doing very well leading into that Breeders' Cup Classic. And then She Dares the Devil, who it's sort of the same way as Nick's Go. She's not aggressive, but she does sort of the same thing every time that she works. She's, you know, gets in a good rhythm, and she clips off 12-second quarter mile or eighth mile fractions almost every single time in her works. And she did that yesterday. She went a minute and change for a 5/8 work. And her work last week was probably more serious than what we saw yesterday at Churchill. But she's leading into the distaff where, you know, if all eyes were on the Latruska Breeze a couple days ago when everyone was sort of, you know, raising a red flag, She Dares the Devil is doing everything the right way. And Brad even said that she sort of goes under the radar. Even when she won the Kentucky Oaks last year at odds of 15-1, she's just sort of always been under the radar. But she has a lot of heart and has a lot of grit in her training and in her races. And so it'll be interesting to see what she can do. If she's beaten Latruska in the past, who knows, she can maybe beat her again on the biggest stage next week.
Well, and the three big names, obviously, you know, key to the activity, and, you know, there's plenty of conversation to be had about the Classic, and to be able to go into that race with, you know, a horse that's going to be on the point, laying down fractions, and then to have Essential Quality, you know, waiting probably mid-pack or, you know, at the front end of the stalkers, it seems like a real embarrassment of riches for the Brad Cox barn. She Dares the Devil, and the whole Latruska, the Latruska incident from Saturday, you know, it feels like it's going to resonate, Kevin, going toward Saturday about, you know, her catching that Baltus workmate and inadvertently, and you know that I thought that the, you know, the, you know, terms of the way it was handled, you know, Ryder just, you know, essentially holding her together and not, you know, not being goaded into, you know, into a real shoulder to shoulder. You could tell that Gutierrez was not, you know, was not thrilled, but he also was kind of stoic about that situation.
Yeah, I gave him a lot of credit because there's, you know, many trainers that would not have sort of the same public reaction that he did after that. And, you know, this stuff happens in the morning all the time in training, and it just sort of gets blown up because it happens, you know, before the Breeders' Cup. And so, you know, it happens. And the one thing that I noticed, you know, as a gambler and a horse player and a guy that watches horses train every single morning, is the rider on Latruska, who's, you know, an exercise rider, he is a bigger statue compared to the rider that was on the Baltus horse. So that has a little bit to do with it. But on the other hand, she was going on the inside of this Baltus, you know, unintended workmate. And what happens on this post position draw today, later on this afternoon, if, you know, the Baffert filly in the distaff draws to Latruska's outside, that could pressure her a little bit, maybe going into that first turn. Maybe it's just the case that maybe she doesn't like to be on the inside of horses, and so that could have a lot to do with it as well. So definitely didn't go to plan, but I have to give Fausto Gutierrez a lot of credit, because there are many trainers that I can name, you know, rattle off the top of my head that wouldn't maybe have handled it the way that he did. And you could tell he wasn't happy, but he was very stoic about what happened.
Cox had a busy weekend overall, and you know, he pushed the highest profile runners to Sunday, Essential Quality, Nick's Go, and She Dares the Devil. However, on Saturday, sent out the two juvenile turf performers over a sealed sloppy racetrack, ready to perform in the juvenile turf, who's, I think, needs what, at least one defection yet to get in?
Yeah, I think he's sitting on the first also eligible spot.
I think so, because, we'll see. Him and Credibility, Harry Rosenblum's Cassie trainee, are the two that are sitting outside. Verbal, too, the Judmont. Chad Brown is going to get in with Haughty, who's been much discussed, the needed, poor Haughty needed that to wait to break the maiden after the DQ and came to Keeneland and got the diploma. Verbal was a first out winner, and also looks like a horse that could have potentially, you know, been a serious player in this juvenile turf should it come off, but ready to perform, sitting on the outside. Turner Loose kind of feels, looking at the way this thing is lining up, feels like an Aunt Pearl duplicate.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's sort of interesting just the way that, Turner Loose performs in the afternoons, and this move that they had on Saturday, really, they didn't do much. I mean, they're both turf horses, and, you know, they were working on the sloppy and sealed track. And Brad sort of said that he wanted to keep them just on, you know, a day earlier schedule because they run on Friday. He had the extra day with, you know, his three that he worked on Sunday. And so he just wanted to keep them on that same schedule 6 days out from Future Stars Friday at the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, they didn't really do much in their work this week, but I do think that all of Brad's horses are very live coming into the Breeders' Cup. He's not really coming in with any sort of, you know, big price long shots that you could see blow up the tote board. And so it's got to be a good feeling for him. And Turner Loose is one of those that I think maybe will go a little bit under the radar just because of, some others in that race, but definitely comes in with a live chance.
Well, and we'll watch for later and see if there's any other changes there in terms of the lineup to see if Ready to Perform has a chance to get into the juvenile turf. One juvenile that is not making the trip, who did work out on Saturday and came back with just enough of a hiccup to declare from the juvenile, Rattle and Roll, and Kenny McPeak. And boy, Kenny's been snake bit all year long on this topic.
I'll tell you what, between the summer at Saratoga when he was forced to quarantine his entire barn up there, and now this, which is, you know, as a trainer, you know there's ups and downs in racing, but man, this is just bad timing for this to happen. And, you know, this horse is very impressive. He's an imposing-looking two-year-old colt, and I think he has a very bright future for next year's Road to the Kentucky Derby and into the Triple Crown campaign. And to me, looking at, you know, how quickly he's run in some of his previous races, I really didn't like him too much into the Breeders' Futurity just because I thought it was too quick of a race, and then running into this Breeders' Cup Juvenile just off of that month. And so, you know, it's bad timing. He looked like that two works ago at Churchill when Brian Hernandez was over him. You know, he did everything the right way, and then he worked over that sloppy track the other morning with Kenny's regular exercise rider, Danny Ramsey, aboard, and didn't do really much at all. It was almost just, you know, a little bit of a glorified two-minute lick, except he accelerated a little bit down the lane. And so just bad timing, and it's a bummer for the Louisville-based Mackin family who own this colt, who they had a giant contingent that were ready to head out to San Diego. And so it's just the ups and downs of horse racing.
Rattle and Roll, the Breeders' Futurity winner, and a horse that actually, you know, before this happened, was getting plenty of consideration as a Jack Christopher alternate. So Rattle and Roll, just a little bruise, and they pulled the shoes and they'll soak him and pull out the Dr. Scholl's and straighten him out, but no Breeders' Cup. You know, and you mentioned the quarantine, and of course there was also, going back to the Triple Crown season, the whole King Fury frustration that kept him out of out of Derby. So Kenny's had a little bit of bad luck on that front. In addition to Rattle and Roll being declared and not entered, you also had a few other. Let me slip these in if you haven't seen the various missives. Idle came out of the Classic, as Jay Privman reported yesterday. Richard Baltus just not happy. Said no real issue, but just wasn't coming into it the way that he was hoping. So no Idle, which I think gets us at the list here. I think gets us to a field of nine in the Classic. You also had Flagstaff, who this was going to be a career finale in the sprint, and Flagstaff retired. Similar issues, just not coming into it the way that John Sadler would have liked. And we also heard that Reina de Melendo would not travel and enter the this is also McPeak, they would not partake in the Filly and Mare turf. So a handful of declarations you can cross off and make it a little bit easier as you continue. People have continuing to get familiar with these fields. One thing you got to do is get familiar with all the Wesley Wards. They're over at Keeneland, and they went through the weekend, and Wesley taking full advantage of the yielding turf, and he says he loves working them over yielding turf, and the whole contingent over there, led by Golden Pal, who's looking to parlay his juvenile turf sprint win into a big boy and girl turf sprint, would be the first to do that. And you know, he's got the rest, Averly Jane and Coffee Maker, Kamari. Did you see, Kevin, did you see the interesting comment about Kamari that Wesley made? I don't know if it was in the, it was maybe Marty McGee had it, where he said that if he had had more time with Kamari, instead of running in the turf sprint, he would have aimed her, and his long-term goal going backwards was the Filly and Mare sprint on the main track. And but he said she's just not in shape for 7 furlongs on the main, but that she couldn't be doing better to go 5 furlongs on the turf. I thought that was really interesting the way he framed that.
Yeah, Wesley is he's sort of Wesley. He has a unique way of thinking and training, and you know, it's it makes sense, because you know, typically it's easier for horses to go over the grass course than it is to go over the dirt sometimes, and especially when you're coming off of a layoff since April, and so you only have to go 5/8 out of Del Mar, and maybe a little less taxing off of that break than it would be on the dirt. But you know, I've tried to get into the mind of Wesley Ward a couple of times with my gambling and handicapping, and it's just not a good endeavor. So I just, you know, sort of believe everything Wesley says, and you know, try not to challenge that.
Some other Kentucky-based horses that are preparing beside the Keeneland and Churchill crowd over at the Thoroughbred Center, and the pair of milers for Paulo Lobo, Imperador, not able to compete in the turf, unfortunately, but in Love and Ivar for the mile. And it took what? I can't remember if it was a decision or a defection that got Ivar, who was first on the Order of Australia. That's right, Order of Australia last week when the decision was made by Aidan O'Brien. When Order of Australia, last year's winner, pulled out, that got Ivar into the mile. So there's the horses from Kentucky that'll start traveling and make their way today to Del Mar. Some other Kentucky-based outfits that are already out west that you're keeping track of, Kevin?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's sort of been interesting when Del Mar ran this summer that some of the Kentucky-based trainers had strings out there. So like Mike Maker, for instance, he had his assistant Nolan Ramsey was out at Del Mar this summer, and Mark Cassie had his assistant Alan Hardy that was out at California this summer. So there's a lot of, you know, trainers that are previously based in Kentucky and also have separate strings out at Del Mar already. So they shipped out a couple of their horses already just because they have the help in the previous stalls out at Del Mar already. Trainer Dale Romans left early with Giant Game, who's going to run in the juvenile, and this horse may be coming late down the stretch for Dale, and he seems to be an improving colt for Dale Romans, so he shipped out a little bit early. And then Steve Asmussen, who typically goes out to the West Coast to the Breeders' Cup very early, and Scott Blasi has been out with those horses out in California. Steve has been at Churchill Downs for the most of the last 2-3 weeks, and so he's been trusting Scott in the hands of with Jackie's Warrior, Clarier, Max Player, you name it. So it's definitely rooting them the best of luck out there, and I think Steve travels out the next couple of days out to Del Mar to join Scott and the previous string that they have out there.
What's your take on the teeth gnashing and hand wringing regarding the Asmussen quote-unquote slump?
You know, Steve, in my mind, is the greatest trainer that we have. He's the most winningest trainer that we have in North America. And, you know, nothing can change that. He can go over 500 right now, and he's still going to have that number one next to his name with the all-time winning trainer. And so it happens in horse racing just because he's at the top of the game. I think it's just at the and the most horses that, you know, of any other trainer that we have in North America. And so that's why I think it's, you know, really taken into a bigger picture than, you know, what we normally see in some of these smaller outfits that have a slump. And so I know he's going to kick out of it. I just, you know, want to be on the right side of it when I'm backing those horses when he's going to come out of it, because he wins races and he wins them in bunches. And, you know, right now he's not doing that, but I guarantee he's going to have them ready to roll here in the next couple of weeks at the Churchill Downs Fall Meet.
Well, and on that topic, let's shift gears away from Breeders' Cup and toward Churchill. Yesterday, the first Stars of Tomorrow card, and a couple of winners, including the fact that Rusty Arnold couldn't run any of the Adams Family horses, but Howling Time comes through, the greatest Halloween hunch play ever, for Dale Romans and the Albaugh family, and McPeak with Sandstone, the Rags to Riches and the Street Sense. But you know, this is always a productive card, and there's maiden winners, and you know, we had the big sibling story with Famed. We had a lot. To me, this is always a card. I print out all the every race on this card and at the end of the meet, Kevin, and it's always, you know, always something you refer back to. There ends up being key races out of this. Some thoughts about getting going on the fall meet.
Yeah, this is a fun race card, and then we close with Stars of Tomorrow too on for the, you know, the same, you know, concept of all 2-year-old races all day at Churchill Downs. And this was inaugurated in 2005 when Doug Bradar was the racing secretary at Churchill Downs. And, you know, it's produced more than 50 grade one winners. And, you know, horses like Gunrunner, Rachel Alexandra, War of Will, you name it, they've run on these cards at Churchill Downs. And so we did, you know, maybe see some potential stars yesterday at Churchill with Sandstone and Howling Time, as you mentioned, you know, the absolute Halloween hunch play. The interesting story that I heard from Howling Time from Jason Luch, the racing manager for the Albaugh Family Stables, is, you know, typically when Dale and Dennis Albaugh go to the sales, they're looking in the early books at the Keeneland sale. So they're books 1, 2. This is actually a later purchase. Jason said he was in book 4 or 5, and Dale called Jason from the back ring, and he said, "We have to have this son of Not This Time." They were, you know, obviously Not This Time being trained by Romans. So they bought this colt, and they actually prepped him to run and to sell back in a 2-year-old sale. Just because, you know, their roster of horses, they wanted to, you know, maybe not have as many, and they pulled him out of the sale. And, you know, luckily they did, because the horse is now a perfect 2-for-2 and the likely favorite for the $400,000 Kentucky Jockey Club on Stars of Tomorrow, too, to close out the fall meet at Churchill Downs. And so this is a horse that I think shows a lot of potential, being a son of Not This Time. He's by an arch mare, so the distance certainly didn't have an issue with him yesterday. Going the mile in the 16th off of a three-quarter of a mile maiden breaking score, and I think he shows a very bright future. And then, you know, Sandstone won the Rags to Riches for Kenny McPeak, which is the prep race for the $400,000 Goldenrod. And, you know, she'll probably have to deal with Fame, too. You mentioned a few minutes ago the half-sister to Essential Quality, who won at Keeneland the other day. I'm assuming that this will be the next likely option for Fame to try to get on that road to the Kentucky Oaks Trail in the Goldenrod. So a lot of two-year-olds yesterday that showed some very, very possible star power potential, and they'll likely run back in 4 weeks on Stars of Tomorrow, too.
Well, and just catching up, the figs hadn't been out, but actually they are now. And this was a very solid set of performances in terms of number power, and the Street Sense winner Howling Time with an 83 buyer, improving off that 81 in the debut win in September at Churchill. And then when it came to the girls' race, where's the girls' race? There it is. Sandstone, an 88 buyer for McPeak's 10-length winner.
And Sandstone is, you know, she's a big, imposing filly. She's, you know, she has a lot of size to her, but she also has speed, and I think that's what makes her so impressive. And, you know, there is, she was one on an off track at the end of the September meet by 9 lengths to break her maiden. And so, you know, how would she handle things? You know, yesterday it was only a 4-horse field that scratched down in that Goldenrod, and she sort of took advantage of that field, but she ran fast, and she ran fast all the way around there. And so I think it'll be a fun next stepping stone for her in the Goldenrod, hopefully against Fame for Brad Cox.
Well, and how about another part of the storyline from yesterday? Dallas Stewart with the boxcar to boxcar double.
I'll tell you what, Dallas Stewart hangs out in our gold room at Churchill Downs, and we know Dallas in racing. He's, you know, he's not shy when it comes to celebrating and hooting and hollering and having a good time. And there were lots of cheers and lots of tickets being cashed up in that gold room yesterday from the Dallas Stewart contention. And, you know, Dallas, you know, one of the best parts of my job is I get to watch all these different trainers every single morning and the way that they train their horses. And they all have their different methods. And Dallas is so hands-on. He's one of those guys that he's at the barn preparing the horses for the next set of training. Then he comes over to the front side, and he's back and forth every single set of training in the morning. So he's very hands-on, and his two-year-olds have shown a lot of potential in their training, and I'm just glad that they're doing it in the afternoons. There was no stopping the Dallas Stewart train yesterday and Brian Hernandez Jr., who were just red-hot at Churchill.
$404 double for Dallas Stewart fans.
Man, I wish I would have had that a couple times.
Here's a quick here's a quick rundown. It's funny, I hadn't thought about those restricted early races, but Vicki Oliver's upstart gelding, Trademark, stretched out and won by 5 with Rafi Bejarano, who, by the way, very quietly, there's been a couple of veteran riders over the last, let's say, 60 days, going back to the end of the summer, who have picked up some momentum. Both Rafi Bejarano and Javier Castellano, who I think, you know, some people thought were marooned, left on the side of the road. The two of them have really kind of regained some mojo.
I was a little worried about Bejarano because he did have some personal issues at the start of the LS meet, but he really put those behind and put his head down and started working hard. And we saw that yesterday. And Castellano, too, with, you know, everyone sort of seemed to forget about him. He's a Hall of Fame rider for a reason. And, you know, it's good to see him making that resurgence. And, you know, almost 61-year-old John Court yesterday winning on Dallas Stewart.
That's right.
So he's enough that, you know, these veterans know how to ride. Yeah, there's some new toys in that jock's room, but these veterans know how to get it done.
81 buyer for Trademark winning the opener yesterday. And I'll get all of these. There were some good prices on the day. Randy Morris had that Texas Red Hot, the Texas Red Colt win, and win well with Joe Talamo, 75 buyer there at 17-1. You did have the McPeak 1-5 shot, who won off by 10. That was the Super Saver. That's a nicely bred filly, Penny Saver. Kind of surprised that that name was available, Penny Saver. That came in the eighth. Just a good day of racing. You know, I was watching. You know, I was watching. You know, had the multi-screen RTN up, and you know, was kind of watching things as the day unfolded, and then into the it was a force out, of course, at as well at Santa Anita yesterday. 81 buyer for the Jimmy Creed Colt of Dallas's. That was B-Sud. So there was some nice efforts. You had that D-Wayne. How about D-Wayne with the Arrogate filly? Not a big fig winner, but second-time starter stretched out from the one-turn mile to a mile and a 16th. This one out of Absinthe Minded, which was a filly that he trained, right? He absolutely trained Absinthe Minded, I think. I'm almost positive. Bryland Farm, Secret Oath. So good day. Good day. And what's the schedule? What's the racing schedule through November?
So we're going to race through the end of November, Wednesday through Sundays. Most days are going to have a first post of 1 o'clock. And, you know, the purse money is just through the roof, more than $1 million of purse money per race per day. And it's, you know, one of those meets where we're winding down the year, but the star power is still going to be there, headlined by the Clark at the end of the meet, which could feature Independence Hall, who was just an absolute impressive winner of the Fayette on Saturday. Keeneland, also King Fury possible to go there. Max Field, Midnight Bourbon. There's some older horse star power that's going to show up there. Bonnie South, Invoutant should have a fun renewal in the Fall City. And then Bell's the one in Wisconsin, who just have this, you know, back-and-forth rivalry. They didn't ship out to California to go to the Philly Mare Sprint, but we'll see them on November the 13th at Churchill Downs. And this Friday and Saturday with the Breeders' Cup going on out at Del Mar, we do have late posts of 2 p.m. and 1:45 p.m. respectively, Eastern time on those days. And, you know, every time the Breeders' Cup horses, you know, the Breeders' Cup race runs, you know, about 10 minutes later, we'll run a race at Churchill Downs. So we'll go back and forth with the Breeders' Cup on Friday and Saturday at Churchill Downs. It's a fun, you know, 21-day stand, 20 days left, and then, you know, we start thinking Derby all the time at Churchill Downs, and that'll be just around the corner after this fall meet.
Kevin Kirstein with us from Churchill. And, KK, what you going to be on America's Day at the Races?
Yeah, we're on America's Day at the Races. You can also download the Churchill Downs live app on the your Roku and Apple TVs and watch the simulcast feed on there on the Churchill Downs live app. And, you know, some good action, and definitely want to dive into the single six or the Derby City six sequence. That always has a huge payout. That already has a carryover of $44,000 and change leading into racing on Wednesday. So lots of fun to be had at the Churchill Downs Fall Meet, and that'll run through November 28th.
Back to Breeders' Cup. We might as well. We've got about 3 minutes to close out the first hour. Kevin, what do you make of Cup? What races are you most excited about? What horses are you keeping a close eye on with expectations to play?
I can't wait to play a Central Quality in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I think he's a totally different horse. And, you know, Nick Sgoe is a very deserved favorite in that race. You know, he has such that pace presence in the Classic that will make him so dangerous on that front end. I get it. There's some other horses that have some speed in there that maybe he hasn't seen recently. But I think Essential Quality is the perfect trip in there, and just the way that he's doing at Churchill Downs. And, you know, I'm not expecting, you know, anything more than 3-1 on this colt. But, you know, he's one of those where my Breeders' Cup will sort of be centered around him in the Classic. I'll just have to sit on my hands a little bit through the 2 days just to make sure I can get there to him by the time that Saturday comes. So I think he's the one. And, you know, Got Stormy for Mark Cassie, who I sort of dismissed a little bit going into the mile, and just because maybe I thought she was sort of on the tail end of her form cycle. But, man, she's been doing really well at Churchill Downs for David Carroll and Kim Carroll and that team for the Cassie barn. And, you know, her work the other day with Declan Carroll was one of those that made me rethink her to use in that race. And so, you know, I'm using multiple horses in the mile, but, you know, she was one that maybe I wasn't going to use it. Is maybe making me rethink that a little bit to use her in that mile.
Interesting. What? How about on Friday? What juveniles are you latched on to?
You know, I really love the way Hidden Connection for Brett Calhoun and the Hidden Brook Farms is coming into this Breeders' Cup juvenile. She's, you know, 2-for-2. She's won at Churchtown. She broke her maiden down at Colonial in Virginia over the summer. She could be a freak. I mean, we just really don't know. Just, you know, how good she could be is a true test in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, obviously, but she could be an absolute freak. And then in that race, too, Juju's Map for Brad Cox, who in her training, she's done nothing wrong. She could be coming running late if the pace is hot in there, which it sort of seems like the pace could be a little bit contested in that race with Hitting Connection, showing some speed, and some others. So I think those two that are both locally based, and yes, I'm a Churchill Downs PR guy and I'm a homer, so, you know, take that into consideration. But I think these two fillies are definitely well met in that juvenile fillies.
What about somebody you're against that you think is vulnerable?
You know, I was against Latruska before that work on Saturday. Now I'm a little bit even more against her after that. And so I think that's the race that, you know, there is some chalky horses over these 2 days. And so that's why, you know, as a gambler, you just sort of have to pick your spots. And this is one race where I think that there are some gamblers that are going to be against her, but she'll be still a very big favorite on that card. And I just think that maybe she's tailing off in her form cycle, where some of the others in that race are maybe on the rise a little bit. And so I'm not sure who I'm going to, you know, key on in that distaff. Maybe She Dares the Devil, maybe Dunbar Road to go against her, but I just think that she's very vulnerable at a short price.
Very good. That's always a question worth asking and getting an answer for. And then the most important question, how was Josie's first Halloween?
Oh, man. She had quite the time yesterday. We had about 6 different Halloween outfits. She went with the monkey outfit. So she got lots of candy that Mom and Dad will be able to eat for the rest of the week.
I love it. I love it. I'll be watching for pictures for baby. I saw the vampire T-shirt the other day, which was quite made me laugh. Actually, I think I was probably probably laying in the hospital, thumbing through things on social media, and that produced a chuckle.
I'll tell you what, she's between that and all of her dad outfits that I'm finally able to convince Mom to let me wear. But she is she's quite the horse racing fan, too. I had on the Breeders' Cup Work Show the other morning watching some of the works out in California, and she's just glued to that TV. So I think she's racing's next degenerate, and hopefully she's a smarter gambler than I am in the future.
Kevin Kirstein, everybody, Horse Racing KK. Are you playing in the BCBC?
I am not, but I'll be rooting on a couple of folks in there and hoping for some big scores in there, but I'm going to sit it out this year.
All right. Well, Kevin's got a terrific opinion in his own right, and nice contest success as well. Kevin Kirstein, thanks so much.
Hey, glad to hear you're back on air and doing well. And, you know, they're going to miss you out at Del Mar this year, Steve, but hopefully next year we'll see you at Keeneland.
Oh, without fail. Thanks so much. Kevin Kirstein, everybody, and from the racing office and the publicity office, Horse Racing KK. You really should follow Kevin's resource, you know, time like this and you know, Derby, you know, leading into Derby as well. The videos that he shoots, he gets up there. He's up there with John and everybody. And it's a tremendous resource for players and fans. Let's take a break. Top of the hour here, Rich Migliori is going to join us. And actually, I'm going to get to see Mig tomorrow. He's coming up to Saratoga for, unfortunately, for a sad reason. But we'll talk to Mig, get the New York weekend reported on, and, of course, showcase day at Belmont on Saturday, part of the showcase day, the main track portion of showcase, because they'll run the turf races this week, which was smart because they knew the weather was rolling in. And there was also a carryover into Saturday, and Jay Hovde made people laugh when he asked, you know, how am I going to be recouping from the hospital? And I said, well, there's a carryover at Belmont. And so people were following that, I think. I went 5 of 6. And it was that horse of Horacio De Paz and Barry Schwartz, Sharp Star. And yeah, she was a graded stake winner. And she was the hard horse to have. She was the one price. And the rest of it, you know, you really didn't have to be overly creative. You know, American Revolution was absolutely a slam dunk. You knew that was a place to lean. New York Traffic, NY Traffic ended up being, I didn't necessarily think that NY Traffic absolutely had to win, but he won that Hudson and won well. It was a worthwhile exercise, but fell short. Let's take a break. We'll talk to Mig, get some Belmont thoughts in, as well as what he's tracking into Breeders' Cup. Later, Tim Schramm from the Cup, speaking of the BCBC. We'll get the wagering menu stuff and get any details necessary for those that want to play the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. Hour two at the races after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube.